Hello and welcome to this week's edition of In Accord. My wife and I have been traveling a great deal these past months. It seems our schedule becomes ever fuller as we move forward. This is positive in some ways. There is more important work to be done around the world. But it presents challenges as well, as we do our best to keep up with our regular editorial and other work. For the Spring Holy Days, we plan to spend the Passover and the first day of Unleavened Bread with our brethren in Cameroon, then move on to Togo and Ivory Coast before a brief visit to South Africa. We purchased our air tickets and requested the visas for the three countries that require them. A visa is permission from a nation that a visitor may legally enter it for business or pleasure. Most countries in Africa require some sort of visa. A few will issue them on arrival if the traveler is arriving from one on a list of approved countries. Requesting visas in Africa used to require sending dossiers full of documentation, such as proof of air travel, hotel reservations, bank statements proving the traveler had enough funds to enter and leave the country, sometimes a letter of invitation from an individual or an organization, the health card proving yellow fever vaccination, along with one's passport and extra photos, to the interested embassies in Washington, D.C., where the papers would be processed. After a few weeks, the passport would be returned with a visa stamped or attached inside, signed by the consul. Because we often needed visas from multiple countries for one trip, we used to have to use courier services that would hand-carry our dossiers and passports to the embassies, pick them up, and transfer them to the next embassy. This was time-consuming at best and rather expensive. More and more countries around the world are now issuing visas online, and this is true of Africa. That is to say, the application process is completed on a website. Photos of the documents are uploaded to the site, and the fee is paid via a bank card. A few days later, a PDF document arrives via an email stating that the traveler is approved for a visa, which will be attached in his passport on arrival in country. So I completed the application for visas for Cameroon, Togo, and Côte d'Ivoire 3 weeks in advance, well within the time frame they required. In less than a week, we had our visa approvals for Togo and Côte d'Ivoire, but not for Cameroon. We waited and waited. Finally, the night before we were to leave, the Cameroon approval had still not arrived. This is not the first time this has happened. Now, airlines will not let passengers board if they don't have a visa approval in hand, because the airlines can be fined if they transport a passenger who doesn't have proof of visa approval for the destination. So, regrettably, at the last minute, I changed our flight schedule so that we would skip Cameroon and fly directly to Togo. I had to inform the members in Cameroon that, due to this failure, we would not be able to be with them for the Spring Holy Days. This was very discouraging to them, because they're only able to gather from around their country when a minister visits and brings them all into Douala, the economic capital of the country. It was a disappointment to my wife and me as well, after all the time and expense we'd invested to receive our visas. We had looked forward to the joy of visiting our brethren and participating in their joy in celebrating God's holy days. In any event, Marjolaine and I left for Togo, flying through Paris. We left on the afternoon of Wednesday, April 9th, arriving in Paris the next morning at 8 a.m. After a four-hour layover, we flew on to Lomé, Togo, arriving at 8:30 p.m. Thursday night. Now here, we had another African snafu. That's old military slang meaning situation normal, all fouled up. We had approval for a visa valid for 2 weeks, and we were going to leave well before the visa expired. But we had arrived 3 days earlier than planned because of the cancellation of the Cameroonian visa. The immigration agents read us the Riot Act. They said there was a major violation. They might just put us on the next flight out of the country to who knows where. Or they might keep us in a holding cell until our visas were validated. We remained calm. This wasn't the first time we'd been through such treatment. About that time, our local elder, Mr. Guy Aliagbidzi, arrived, and he reasoned with the agents. They finally told me to go online and request a new visa, valid from the current date. But their website was not working properly, and I was not able to complete the application. Finally, after keeping us for 2.5 hours, the agents gave us a temporary entry visa, which would allow us to go to the immigration office and explain ourselves the next day. After a good night's sleep, Guy and I took the passports to the immigration office on Friday morning and explained the situation. The agent said they would keep our passports, told us to come back and pick them up the next day. So Sabbath morning, first thing, we went back and retrieved our passports with bridge visas stamped in them, allowing us to stay until our other visas became valid. Marjolaine had had a slight sniffle as we left home, and after 2 days and a night of travel, it was worse when we arrived in Togo. But by Friday morning, she had a bad cold, and by the afternoon, I had caught it as well. We both had a fever, so we were contagious. I did go to the immigration office in the morning. All our business was conducted out of doors. And afterwards, I asked Guy to conduct the Passover as he usually does. Marjolaine and I took the Passover in our hotel room. We were not able to join the members for the night to be much observed or for the first holy day, which, of course, was a disappointment. By the end of our stay, I was healthy enough to conduct a Bible study for the group on the topic of the holy days. We were able to fellowship and enjoy the company of one another. Guy told me that they would gladly have run the risk of getting sick to spend more time with us, but I didn't think that risk was appropriate, especially considering the number of children that were present. On Thursday, April 17th, we flew on to Abidjan in Côte d'Ivoire. Here we celebrated the last day of unleavened bread with a little congregation in the rural village of Lamé, about an hour's drive outside the city. This was during the rainy season, and we drove through a heavy rain to reach the village. Then after parking, we ran through a light rain, through wet sand, and in between puddles to reach the little church hall. The rain stopped, fortunately, after we began our service. We were very happy to see our brethren once again and to celebrate this holy day together. After our service, we distributed used eyeglasses contributed by congregations in the United States. This is a much appreciated gift that allows members to read their Bibles clearly. Then we shared a meal prepared by the ladies of the congregation. The heavy heat and the humidity of the day were oppressive. We were all soaked with perspiration, but we very much enjoyed our time together. I had a few counseling sessions about baptism, and I was introduced to a new couple that is attending regularly in Lamé. Altogether, it was a very encouraging day. Sunday morning, we began the drive up to Man in the center west of Côte d'Ivoire. It's a 7-hour drive to reach Man. But I was thankful to see that the road repairs had finally been completed, and we had smooth pavement on the road the entire route, the first time I've ever experienced that in more than 20 years of traveling Côte d'Ivoire. The group we had visited last year related to Paltia that told us that they were very intent on being part of our association had just informed them that they were going to another church, a Sunday-keeping church. That was disappointing, of course. But I have to say this happens fairly often in French Africa. It takes time to know whether an individual or a group is truly being called by God. The New Testament speaks of false apostles, false prophets, false brethren, tares among the wheat, and so on. We must be welcoming and brotherly to those who come to us, but also recognize that not all those who come to us will truly become of us. So we should be welcoming, but alert. This time, we were traveling up at the request of one of the first groups I had visited in the Man region, found in the village of Yaplu, about an hour's drive from Man, on what the French call piste, which we could translate as a track or a trail, not up to the level of being called a road. When we arrived, we were welcomed by drums, singing, and dancing, as I first was when I came here about 20 years ago. The congregational leaders, two brothers named Séraphin and Clovis, who speak French well, welcomed us formally and explained why they asked us to come. A few years ago, the regional leader under whom they'd served left Kagwa and went with a man who has gone through several Church of God associations and who offered the regional leader a motorcycle and more money than we were giving him to cover his expenses. He left Kagwa and promised the other local leaders generous gifts and even salaries if they would continue with him. They had worked under him for a long while, so they continued to do so. But it turned out that the promises were false. He did not share with them. And they observed increasingly that the regional leader had given himself over to material goods before the service of God. The two brothers remembered the years we had worked together honestly, in sincerity and truth. They apologized profusely for having been fooled, for having followed a man that they should not have. And they asked to be readmitted to Kagwa. When I told them we were happy to have them return with us and that we would again do our best to serve them in the fear and love of God, they broke out into applause and joyful singing. It was an encouraging moment for all of us, I believe. The next day we drove back to Abidjan, and the next day flew to Johannesburg, South Africa, where no visa is required for U.S. travelers visiting for less than 90 days. Our longtime friend, Mr. Tim Waddle, the pastor in Johannesburg, met us on arrival at 4 a.m. on Friday morning. Now that's true friendship. We rested on Friday and caught up on our news. It was good to see Tim and Valerie Waddle in a secure location with electric fences and barbed wire around their gated neighborhood. South Africa has become a dangerous place for people of all races, but there is among many a special hatred of white people after the years of apartheid government. Most of our members around Johannesburg, at least, are able to live in fairly safe neighborhoods, for which we are thankful. At the same time, many, if not most, of our members in Johannesburg personally knew someone who's been murdered. I know all of our brethren in South Africa would appreciate our prayers for God's protection and deliverance. They certainly pray fervently for the establishment of the kingdom of God. The purpose of our passage in South Africa was to visit the congregation in Johannesburg and to spend a few days with our friends the Waddles, with whom we share years of service in Africa. It's encouraging to spend time with fellow workers, to compare notes, and be able to make suggestions to one another. One of the pleasures of South Africa is to be able to visit the country's numerous game parks, one of which is only a few hours' drive from the Waddles' home. This is a bright spot that comes of living on the other side of the world from one's physical family in order to serve one's spiritual family. We returned home from South Africa just in time to participate in the International Ministerial Conference, which, as you've already heard, was extremely successful and encouraging for all who participated. For the Pentecost weekend, my wife and I flew to Burlington, Vermont, where we picked up a rental car and drove 2 hours to the Montreal-Quebec area, crossing the international border along the way. We were very happy to spend the Sabbath and the Feast of Pentecost with our French-Canadian brethren. We enjoyed the fellowship and shared several meals together at noon on both days. Pentecost, as are all of God's feast, is rich in spiritual meaning. My sermons covered the symbolism of the wave sheaf offering, the importance of our calling, and parallels between the tabernacle in the desert and the Church of God today. Some members were traveling, so the attendance was a little smaller than usual, but it was very encouraging as a weekend. The Harpers, who pastor Montreal and Toronto, spent the weekend with the congregation in Toronto, about 6 hours distant. But then after the weekend, we were able to spend parts of 2 days together with the Harper family. We talked about many things all together, and Mr. Harper and I had the chance to have a long conversation about the present and future of the work in Canada, both French and English speaking. The Harpers have a lovely family. Their homeschooled children excel in many subjects. It's a true pleasure to spend time with them, and we very much appreciate their service far from home. Leaving the Ottawa area, we drove down into New England, where I was to speak the following Sabbath. Along the way, I took the chance to do some research for future columns in Discern, future programs on Life Open Truth Presents, and just in my speaking. We briefly visited the homes of the John Adams family near Boston. John Adams was the second president of the United States and a very important founding father of the nation. His son, John Quincy Adams, was the sixth president of the United States and a devoted civil and political servant all his life. We were surprised to see the very humble houses in which both men were born. We also visited Plymouth Rock, where a group called the Pilgrims landed in 1620, an important chapter in the development of what would become the United States. Near Plymouth Rock is a reconstruction of the Plymouth Plantation, founded by the Pilgrims, as well as a reproduction of the Mayflower, the ship that brought them to North America. We were very happy to spend the Sabbath with the New England congregation. Members come from several different states to attend this congregation west of Boston. We've had the pleasure of visiting several times now after our visits in Montreal, so it was again a pleasure to catch up on news one with another. A final enjoyable part of our travels was to have lunch with Mr. and Mrs. David Rand, who pastor New England, and Mr. and Mrs. Paul Suckling, a retired couple, longtime servants in the Church of God. Mr. Suckling was in charge of ministerial services for many years in the United Kingdom and ran the church's very successful summer camp on Loch Lomond in Scotland. I first met the Sucklings when I was an Ambassador College student and volunteer staff member at the camp in the early 1980s. Mr. Suckling was a gentle and inspiring leader for many hundreds of teens and staff members who passed through this program. I also remember clearly when in 1984, I think it was, Mr. Suckling had me demonstrate some water ski equipment for Mr. Herbert Armstrong during his visit to the camp. Those were really exciting days. We were able to share many positive memories of the camp, which made a deep, abiding, and positive mark on the young people and staff members who participated in it for more than 20 years. It was encouraging to spend time with such faithful and longtime servants. Monday of this week, my wife and I flew home, arriving late after several flight delays. We're now in the process of planning our next trips, one to Uganda and East Africa in late June or early July, and a pastoral trip through Europe in late July and August. In closing, allow me to remind you what Paul said to the church in Thessalonica. He said, "Finally, brethren, pray for us that the word of the Lord may run swiftly and be glorified, just as it is with you, and that we may be delivered from unreasonable and wicked men, for not all have faith." This is still applicable 2,000 years later. Thank you again for your prayers on behalf of those who travel for the Church of God. There are many pastors who do, and we all appreciate your thoughtful concern. Tune in next week when Mr. Franks will share some moments from the memorial service for our beloved brother in the ministry, Mr. Richard Thompson. That's all for this week. From all of us at the headquarters office, I wish you a pleasant and encouraging Sabbath day.